And welcome, everybody, to YouTube here on... I said it backwards. Welcome, everybody, to Overtime on YouTube. Did we all make it? I'm here. Kyle's troubleshooting. Rob Giller, Alex, you all there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are we on YouTube? Can you hear us?
We might drop for a second.
All right, we might drop for a second, I hear. Rob has a blank look on his face. Does that mean we're on YouTube or not?
We are not yet on YouTube.
We are not yet on YouTube. Okay. Well, this is fun. And you'll tell us when we are on YouTube.
I will tell us when we're on YouTube.
Well, I'm just going to sit back and wait for that.
Okay. We are on YouTube.
Oh, that was a nice little break. Okay. We are here. Ready to chat away for a bit longer. Good discussion tonight.
Yes.
And I guess
I agree.
Uh-huh.
I did find something, by the way, during the break. I was doing a little bit of research about this SALT typhoon compromise of telecommunications systems across the United States. And it turns out it does very much seem like things are circling in and focusing on the CALIA, lawful intercept technology. And I found a letter that somebody with whom we're very friendly wrote to the FCC chairwoman on the 11th of October of this year. And it's really kind of interesting. It's a letter from Senator Ron Wyden to the FCC chairman as well as to the attorney general. And he wrote this, which is, I think, literally quite aligned with everything that we had discussed. These telecommunications companies are responsible for their lax cybersecurity and their failure to secure their own systems. But the government shares much of the blame. And listen to this. The surveillance systems reportedly hacked were mandated by federal law through the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, CALIA. CALIA, which was enacted in 1994 at the urging of the FBI, forced phone companies to install wiretapping technology into then-emerging digital phone networks. In 2006, acting on a request from the FBI, the FCC expanded this backdoor mandate to broadband internet companies. During the congressional hearings for CALIA, cybersecurity experts warned that these backdoors would be prime targets for hackers and foreign intelligence services. However, these concerns were dismissed by then-FBI director, who testified to Congress that experts' fears of increased vulnerability were unfounded and misplaced. Congress, relying on the FBI director's assurance and the security risks experts warned about could be addressed, passed a law mandating backdoors. The DOJ received $1 billion in today's dollars to provide industry grants for the development and purchase of new wiretapping technology. And that's what China used against us to spy on, presumably, our most high-ranking elected officials and presidential appointees.
Go ahead, Rob.
Just FYI, we keep dropping out and buffering on YouTube. It seems to be a universal problem. The chat is confirming that everyone's getting it.
Okay, you were suspecting something like that might be happening, but not on the radio. Is that correct?
We started getting complaints about the quality of the radio stream toward the end of the show. I can't speak to the full length of the show, but on socials, people started letting us know that they were getting lots of crackling and dropping out.
You need to let us know when that happens, because we thought everything was fine. So convey that to us, and we can try to fix it. Now, Kyle, you're on top of whatever is going on here. We have so much bandwidth. We have so much high tech, and it fails.
Yeah, well, our best intentions are not always the source of technical stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was going to do is restart some of the software I'm using, but I'm not sure that that's exactly needed.
But what do you think would help? We need to – everyone, we're going to fix this. We're going to fix it together.
I wasn't really thinking about doing this on the air as like a group project.
Well, it's going to be now. We have no choice.
I could just leave and y'all can figure it out.
Well, that's not nice.
Well, I don't know. Can I stop it for a second?
You can do whatever you want. We want to be able to understand each other. So, yeah, go ahead. Just let us know what to expect.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop it, and I'm going to reload things, and we'll be right back.
Okay, are we back?
I believe.
So what did we do?
Did exactly what I said. Restarted the software that I was using.
Okay.
I'm not sure that helped. And this may be something that is not in my control, so please don't continue to look at me.
I'm not looking at. I'm not even looking in your direction.
I'm doing what I normally do.
I just people are curious, like what we did
to
fix it.
The OS wants to do some stuff that I'm obviously not going to let it do.
No, not now. No,
obviously not going to let it do.
What the hell does it think it is?
Then the browser wanted to do some stuff that I obviously didn't want it to do.
No.
Then like the streaming software like launched very slowly because all that was going on, and then it. I didn't realize it wasn't already launched. I didn't realize it was already launching, so then I like basically tried to launch it four times, and then by the time I dug through all of that, we were already like kind of underway, and so that ultimately was showing some kind of overload exceeded, which is more of like a bandwidth thing. Like the stream encoding was too high resolution, which hasn't really been a problem lately, unless it's outside of my control. So, do your part, Internet.
Well, it's crazy because we have so much bandwidth, and it still somehow acts like we have no bandwidth. Every bit of software, every machine, like my machine was running some kind of diagnostic test. It decided that the middle of the show was the best time to do that, and I had to abort that. Yeah. You guys out in Skype land, are you all there still, and can you hear us, and do we sound okay?
So we're here, and we can hear each other, but we are buffering again as we speak on YouTube.
Wow.
We're buffering more than not right now. Someone did pipe in the chat to mention that apparently there were some audio issues at the end of Off the Wall last night.
Really? Okay. Didn't know about that.
I just read some as they come up. Yes, Rebel did very helpfully inform us that streaming is not working right now.
All right, you know, here's my theory. I think our bandwidth might suck. I think we need to reboot a modem or a router or something like that, and maybe that'll fix that. And look, this is okay. It's only YouTube. I don't really care. You know, we can just play around and do diagnostics all hour long. Radio, though, I'd rather not. I hope the radio show went out okay. But regardless, we have a clean copy here in the studio, so that is where we'll go on the archive. So if you only heard choppy bits of the radio show, fear not. You can hear the whole thing in its splendor when we get it uploaded. But, Kyle, what do you think of the idea of just rebooting our modem?
Yeah, it's all kinds of screwed up. But...
All right, how do we do that? Where do we go? I don't even know where the modem is.
Very funny. Oh, you're serious?
I am serious because we have different modems in different places. I'm not sure.
I'm not talking about this on the air. So
okay, so I'm going to turn us down. How long should we expect this to last?
I don't know exactly what we're doing. So
we're rebooting a modem.
10 minutes.
5 minutes to reboot a modem. All right. Well, if this is Space Command, all right, you got to tell the media what's going on. Tell the people what's going on. So, folks, we're gonna just be silent for about 5 minutes, hopefully at the max. And when we come back, hopefully we'll be in decent shape. Okay. We're going to try this again. Kyle did some magic. Things look a little better on this machine here.
Yes. We did the next logical thing. We gave the OS a little bit of a restart. And I got to say, as with every good radio station studio computer, we're running a Windows machine.
Yeah.
And I got to say, it's looking like this was a Microsoft Black Cyber Monday kind of thing, and they just needed to interrupt our show.
Uh-huh.
I really apologize.
Well, you have nothing to apologize for. I'm kind of thrown now because we have an AI device
to go fight it? I will fight it right now.
The wake word is computer, and whenever somebody says that, it says something to us, and I can't shut it up now because I just said that word again. Okay. Guys in Skype land, Rob, I see you have a big thumbs up. What does that mean exactly? I don't know anymore.
That means we're back on YouTube, live and direct and loud and clear, and we sound good.
We sound better than before.
Yes, in that we can hear us at all.
Okay. Well, that's good. So we won't reboot the modem because apparently it's not a bandwidth issue. It's a Microsoft issue. I saw what it was doing. It was like trying to sell you something while you were trying to fix this.
That was after the reboot. It was like it did some kind of update, and then it like runs you through this stuff where it's like, are you sure you don't want to put all your stuff in our cloud? Are you sure you don't want to get 50% off of this? Are you sure you don't want to, like, sign up for this and, like, register for that? Are you sure you don't want to buy this? Are you sure? And it's like, you have to sit there and look for, like, skip, don't, no, go away.
And it kept moving.
I hate you.
It kept moving the box all over, so you had to chase it.
Burn Redmond. Yeah, all of it.
Awful. Wow.
It's, anyway.
So.
Thanks, Microsoft. Yeah. We love you. And now we're here.
All right, well, you know, we're going to keep all the silence, obviously, on the archive, because that's what we do. Things air as they air. But, boy, that was fun. I think what we can do is just reboot that machine more regularly, and maybe that won't happen.
Well, there is actually another, like, system update. I've just been avoiding a bunch of stuff, but basically the thing was going quite clunkily, as their modern OSs do when encountering anything unusual. Like their software working or being updated to a working state. But, it was like opening OBS, the streaming software we use, like multiple times, and then saying it was already open. I don't know if that was like ghosty attempts at opening it, but everything was like on a huge delay. And then the browser was doing this. It was just very, very sad.
It was.
Hobbling along.
Now, we lost about 10 to 12 minutes of the show. Now, can we check to make sure we can get that time added back onto the YouTube satellite? Because I know it's expensive and time is fleeting. We can? Okay. Green light. So we'll go for an extra 10 to 12 minutes or so. Cool. All right. Alex, were you saying something before you were so rudely cut off?
He was citing Kalia.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I guess I was, right? So long ago.
Just give us the wrap up the tail end of it or something.
Yeah, so I found this letter from Senator Wyden that he had sent to the FCC chairwoman as well as to the Attorney General, to Merrick Garland. And he was going on about how this was the Kalia infrastructure that Salt Typhoon had compromised as part of this nationwide compromise of the telecommunications infrastructure that allowed essentially a foreign adversary like China to eavesdrop on any communications. And he had mentioned, and I think this is exactly what we were talking about. So he's so aligned, I think, in so many ways with us. He said during the congressional hearings for Kalia, cybersecurity experts warned that these back doors would be prime targets for hackers and foreign intelligence services. However, these concerns were dismissed by then FBI director who testified to Congress that experts' fears of increased vulnerability were unfounded and misplaced. He then goes on to mention that in today's dollars, the Department of Justice received $1 billion U.S. dollars to provide industry grants for the development and purchase of this new wiretapping technology. That was at issue, and like I said, we talked about this back in the 90s. I think it was 1994 when CLIA was passed. So, yeah, 30 years ago is when we were arguing about this. And look, it took 30 years for a foreign adversary to compromise the infrastructure, but it happened.
Yeah, it did. And it's inevitable that something like this will happen. So, hopefully, I don't know, the cat's out of the bag, so there's really nothing we can do that I can say hopefully about, because it's already worst-case scenario. People's information is out there. People have been compromised through no fault of their own. Will there ever be, you know, responsibility taken by anybody for this? I doubt it.
No. Probably.
We pay.
Yeah.
Don't you understand? That's how this works. We pay. They don't ever pay. Okay? You pay the bill. You pay for your credit reporting to get, you know, turned on and off and on and off. You pay. They don't ever pay. The politicians who let them get away with all of it don't pay. They never pay. They get money. Their shareholders get money. They monopolize so that you have no other option. They make you hostage to their walled garden. And you pay. And then you get mad at something like this, and you still pay. They don't pay you. You're not going to make any money. No one's going to give you a check. There's going to be no, even if there is restitution and these guys are like some kind of monetary compensation, it'll go to lawyers. Don't forget the lawyers. Feed the lawyers. Yeah. You don't get anything. You barely get a phone certified to work on a 5G network. If that, you're lucky. You pay.
I'm getting that we pay. And Alex, you're a lawyer, so you don't have to pay.
No, I don't pay. We get a free pass. We get, you know, we've had 5G since the 80s, as a matter of fact. I don't know if that would make anybody mad. I want to share another choice bit from Senator Wyden's letter. I mean, and by the way, so I talked with him fairly recently because, you know, he's married to our dear friend, Nancy Bass Wyden, who is the owner of the Strand Bookstore, who's been on the show as well. So he goes on to say that DOJ should recognize the failure of its current approach to combating cyber attacks, and that the data breaches that caused this incident are a direct result of corporate negligence. A few sentences later, he says, while federal investigations and prosecutions of foreign hackers can yield valuable results, it would be short-sighted in the extreme for the DOJ to prioritize criminal prosecutions of foreign hackers who are almost never brought to justice above holding companies accountable for negligent cybersecurity. These companies are corporate scofflaws that have harmed our public and our national security through their negligence. DOJ can prevent future cyber attacks, incentivize improvements in corporate security by working with these regulators, et cetera, et cetera. But so, I mean, he's calling them out. He's saying that, you know, this was corporate negligence that harmed national security. And the companies need to be held accountable before the DOJ goes after these foreign adversaries that compromise the systems. I think that's a very interesting approach.
And we can't go after them. We have to be like, you know, minding our P's and Q's and nice and afraid. Because again, if you do anything, if you get fed up, if you decide the corporation might have to change some behaviors or something, you pay with your life. You go to jail, you know? Like, you get all this fear to act. Don't do anything. Just keep paying. Like, it's absurd. And, like, I've lost my sense of humor about it. I mean, I'm being funny, but it's not funny. None of it is. Like, we're hung out to dry, and now it's like, okay, foreign adversaries are in the mix, and no one really cares. And we have all these, like, jobs and all these titles and all this normalizing of security and, like, an understanding of it. But we're not prepared, and we're all just going to be victims now. That's the game plan. I find this absurd. Like, I, as a hacker, I'm a little bit annoyed. Like, I find the whole situation irritating, all of it. Like, I don't, my identity in this and my sense of purpose is, I'm very lost. Because I feel like there are so many failures. And we laugh and have a good time and everybody, I don't know. I like, goes back and does a bad job. And I don't know if we're being heard or not heard, or it's just a big funny joke. I'm starting to think it's the latter. But I'm welcome to other thoughts on this. Like, I don't have any more to really, like, break into the discourse. It's just very, very frustrating that after decades of listening to and then talking about and airing, and we're still the boogeyman, and, like, none of these companies would hire us. They're all like, oh, we don't trust you. Hey, we don't trust you. Mm-hmm. None of you. Okay? We don't want your jobs. Okay? Stop. Not, like, as though we want you to trust us anymore. Like, forget it.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, you know, they are not the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow at all.
Lowest common denominator at best practices.
Well, it just goes to show the lack of foresight. And you know, yeah, I don't think people have, by people, I mean people in power, they have not listened to us. Had they listened to us, a lot of this stuff wouldn't be happening. And basic security would have been observed. And, you know, we would be in much better shape. Me, I'm confused. I mean, who has my data? You know, the data that I was concerned about, is it the FBI? Did they get my data without going through channels? Is it Iran? Is it China? Who has my damn data? It just seems to be out there for anybody. Frustrating.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, again, this is like a problem, not just in the United States, but I think particularly perhaps because of the United States, the nature of the surveillance capitalism economic models that all these platforms have engaged in for the last 20-something years. It's like trying to control your data is like trying to get toothpaste back in the bottle now. And this is where I think technology is evolving, and where the sort of new internet that is developing in the Web3 space has the ability to give users back this type of power so that they themselves can assert their own terms of use. We don't necessarily have to abide, like Kyle was saying, by, you know, all the rules and regulations of these companies. You know, it's what we, well, you know, our own terms, we can begin to dictate the terms again of how our data is used and shared and potentially abused.
Yeah, I mean, just being woefully behind on privacy legislation, which we've talked about ad nauseum, right. I mean, that speaks to what Ease points and what you just said. I mean, that is, they're so mere. What are you supposed to be worried about other than everything all the time? And what kind of actual person in the modern era do you become? Are you just frantic and untrusting of everything and everyone? And how long before that turns into complete complacency and lack of thinking it's just all laughable or that it doesn't matter anymore? Because we've come round and round and round to that cycle. And there's generations of people that don't understand why or how this might affect or be important. And it is important. And I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like anyone takes it very seriously. And it's just there's so many things that are put on the I'm speaking as consumer, but I think as a hacker, I think we have a little bit more knowledge about the kind of structure of the system we're looking at, as big and complex and integrated as it all is. But consumers themselves then take on a lot of the liability, and are told all of a sudden now consumers have to be like dealing with advanced persistent threat actors basically constantly. Like, we've been reporting about that for like decades in one way or another, and it's now like a regular thing, and like here it comes to the telecom network finally, and it's like and it's as alarming as ever. And what is the when is it of a level of concern that it is not the burden of the consumer or like built in to the cost that the consumer pays and not ever into the profits, not ever into the structures of new policy that would curb the worst impacts of some of this stuff as we bravely slang chips to everybody in this new era and talk about all these new, I mean, as much as you're talking about, like new ways of doing it all, but yet we're still fundamentally losing, as you point out, like a grip on it. It's just, you can't contain it unless you have some support. And I just really think it hasn't been baked in. And we keep talking about it, and it's just, it's wildly frustrating. And I just don't want to rant. I'm here to take calls. Just tell me when to take a call.
I think I have a solution. I think I have a solution to all this. Crypto.
Why? I don't know if you're kidding.
I just wanted to make things even worse.
Well, cryptography would help a little.
If I can piss everybody off at the same time, there's a certain unity. No,
yes, it is in a sense, what cryptography
is. Don't agree with me, Alex. Don't agree with me.
Or I'm not agreeing with you in that it's crypto, as in cryptocurrency, but cryptography, as in the public key system on which things like Ethereum are built, I think are very much at play here. But I'm going on about this because I just finished my new column, which is about bridging the divide between the hacker culture and the Ethereum culture. And I'm arguing in that column that there is this unnecessary divide, and it's wrong, and we need to begin to bridge it because we're fighting for the same things. So you'll have to read the column. It'll be on page 52, I'm guessing, in the next issue.
Which I believe is due out in mid-January, so that'll be right. Something. Okay, we're going to take phone calls, 802-321-4225. That's area code 802-321-HACK, and we'll answer questions or hear stories or whatnot, whatever people feel like. 802-321-4225. Let's wait for those phone calls to come pouring in.
Just watch, like, in the new cell phone contracts, like, you are now an agent to tasked with performing counter-espionage operations. If you see anything fishy on your device, like, you're deputized because of this terrible tragedy that happened to the telephone company. You were also theorizing about it. Maybe it's sort of like a forewarning for other purposes.
That was my more optimistic side. When the FBI is saying, hey, guys, you got to use encryption now. Maybe they're saying because, all hell's going to come down the highway next year and the Justice Department is going to be completely co-opted by fascists. So you guys might want to start encrypting your traffic because we won't be able to protect you anymore if you believe the FBI protects you.
This is the FBI.
Yeah, it's okay. Let's say this is the good Agent Cooper. And the bad Agent Cooper is just come back from the Black Lodge, and he's going to be installed in the spring, and who knows what's going to happen? So yeah, I watch a lot of David Lynch, so that's probably not healthy.
Or is it? I think you're well prepared for all eventualities. We have a phone call.
We do.
Yes.
I didn't hear it ring. I guess the ringer is off.
I believe it was silence. You want me to put it on a little bit?
Well, it's good to hear that ring. It's kind of
comforting.
All
right, comforting. You do that. I'll do this.
All right. And good evening. The person's already talking. Do I just let them talk, or should I greet them?
Just interrupt them, like, rudely.
All right. Well.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking to somebody else. Hi, Emmanuel.
Rebel. Damn it. It's traditional when you call a radio show or a podcast, as this is, that you wait to be introduced or greeted by the host before you start talking. To do otherwise while I am correcting you is considered a grave affront and one that should not be tolerated. So I hope I've made myself clear. With that, let's go to this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, and I hope that phone call
Rebel. Yeah, Rebel, how you doing? What a surprise.
Yes. On what you're talking about now, but what you were, I'd like to mention of what you were talking about on the radio about phone numbers.
That's one hell of a sentence. Yeah, but okay, go ahead. Let's do that.
Yes, I think that, what's that thing called? Oh, shit.
Time and how it's passing?
No. That thing that, when you take the phone numbers and you can have different companies on one phone number.
Portability?
Boy, portability. I think that's the worst thing that they've done. Because now all these Indian scammers, they have these phone numbers. Like, when you get calls, they come in 917 numbers and, like, you know, phone numbers, like, from your area code and from different exchanges that you call. Then
they don't actually, we've been over this so many times, they don't actually have your phone, the phone number. They're faking the phone number out. I mean, they're basically spoofing caller ID so that you think they're calling from a phone number, but they're not.
So they're spoofing the caller ID and they're putting in a phone number of a phone that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
I guess.
Or that does exist.
Or
that
they're putting in phone, or they're getting 800 numbers
mm-hmm.
that, like, when you call, like, Microsoft, the Microsoft scam, when they say your computer's infected, it says, call 1-800-whatever, and you call that 800. How are they getting these 800 numbers? That's why we're running out of 800 numbers.
Well, we have all kinds of toll-free, everything from 833 up to 800 now is toll-free, but it's easy to get a toll-free number. They're cheap, so I don't think that's really that difficult.
So, you guys have an 800 number.
I don't know if we still do, but we did, and it was easy and cheap, and you can program it to go anywhere.
Yeah, but it's cheap. How much is it when somebody calls you? How much do you have to pay when somebody calls you?
Not much. I mean, I never actually saw the bill, but I think it's like, you know, a dime or something for a call. I'm not really sure. At one point, I know they added more for payphones, but not many people were calling from payphones. But in the end, you know, who even needs toll-free phone numbers anymore? It's kind of an antiquated system.
Right, that's the other thing. When people advertise it, they advertise a toll-free number. When they're, like, local right now, why don't you just give a local number? Like, mm-hmm. why? I mean, nobody uses payphones. Nobody has a need for, because nobody really does long distance.
Let me ask you, Rebel, maybe you would remember this, but back in the old days, and I'm talking like 80s and 90s, they used to always have to give some kind of technological reason. Maybe somebody could fill us in on this. They would have to give an 800 number for the country, and then another 800 number for in-state. The in-state number would always be different.
I watch old videos, and it says, in Connecticut, dial 1-800-whatever, from New York, dial whatever, you know?
Yeah, so you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wow.
Let's see. Yeah, 800 numbers, and then because, you know, so that you don't have to make a long-distance phone call. And now that even wired line, if you get a wired line in your house, you don't have any, it's like a cell phone. You pay a monthly service charge fee. You make all the long distance calls, unlimited long distance. So you don't really have to worry about, like, long distance charges or toll charges.
That's true. But, you know, if you want to pay for it, they'll charge you for it. You know, you can still do it.
Well, I don't know if they'll even offer that, like per call charging. Per call. But I don't know. I don't have a wired line phone, so.
Sad day when Rebel disconnected his wired phone. I mean, think about what that meant. You know, you were the phone company customer.
Yeah, and the third number calls, they don't do that anymore.
Oh yeah, third. Okay, explain what that was.
Well, I mean, you can make collect calls where you call. If I was called this number, 802-321, you know, and back in the days when you had to make long distance calls,
right.
You dial 0 and then the 802-321 or 225. Say I'd like to make a collect call where you would pay for the call. You'd say,
If I accepted the call, I could say no. I don't want to accept the call from that person.
Or I could make another phone call and bill it to that number, like instead of having a calling card.
Well, let's just stay on collect for a second because there are a couple of types of collect calls. Collect person to person, and that's where you're asking for a specific person. And they have to go and get that person to the phone to accept the call. And at all that time, you could be talking on the phone to the other person and sending secret messages to them while the operator is waiting, you know, for the person you're asking for to come to the phone to say yes or no to the collect request.
Yeah, no, but you could do this thing where the automated operator says, you have a collect call from, and then when you would say, call me back at 2793400.
Well, that's the recorded collect name. That's when you're not talking to an operator at all, but you record your name in a three-second window. And, yeah, people did that all the time. People, you know, even my grandparents did this. You'd call it when you got home, you'd ring the phone twice, and we saved money that way and conveyed a message.
Oh, yeah, I remember when I was in college, my father would say, reverse the charges, and I'll not accept the charges, and then I'll call you back.
He
didn't know the phone number that I'm my dorm's phone number, but he'd say, call, instead of me making a long-distance call home,
mm-hmm.
I remember this. He said, call collect, and then I won't accept the charges, and that'll be my signal to call you back.
You could also just make a person-to-person call, not collect, just person-to-person, and then the operator would stay on, and you wouldn't be billed unless you reached that person. So that was an opportunity to convey all kinds of messages in the time that they were looking for that person, too. But, okay, now let's get to the thing you were talking about, the third-party call. How did that work?
Well, that was if you didn't have a calling card where you'd bill if you were at a pay phone or even at a regular phone. You would call a number like a
You would do that. The fact that you could do that, that's the issue. You could bill a phone call to somebody who has no idea who you even are.
Right. Well, back in the Bell System days, you just tell the operator, you call, let's say, 802-321, whatever. I call you, let's say I'm calling from somewhere where I don't want them to pay for the call.
Mm-hmm.
I call and bill it to another number. And usually it would go through, like I bill it to 516-751-2600.
Uh-huh. Our old office line. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, you still...
No, we don't have 516 anymore. They took that away from us.
No, I know that, but I'm saying you still have that office number. But let's say I wanted to bill to that number back in the old days and call 802-321-HACK, 321-4365.
Yes, but what we could do is put a block on third-party calls on our phone line.
Not in the Bell System.
So you never succeeded at doing that, Rebel.
Right. But during the Bell System, before 1984, the TSPS operators did not have the option to know whether you wouldn't have that option back in those days.
Right, but then you came on the scene and that option became very necessary, so they implemented it. What they did sometimes, they would call the number that you were trying to bill to and ask for verification that it's okay to do that. But what if the person's not home? What if it's busy? You know, what if it goes to an answering machine? So sometimes the default was just, charge it to that number and see what happens.
But sometimes I remember I seeing a video on YouTube about in Virginia, back in the 80s, they had a problem with people billing calls to third numbers. So they just started calling for acceptance. And this is back in the Bell System days. I saw a video in the 80s.
Okay. I think that's pretty much all the kinds of calls you could make. I'm sure there are others. There was busy line verification and call interrupt.
That's also you was something you wouldn't be able to do in the Bell System days. That only came up about after 1984.
What did?
The busy line verification.
Really? You couldn't verify before 1984? I thought you could.
No. TSPS wasn't able to verify. It was only the TAPS system and the OSPS system.
Wow, okay. That's something I didn't know. But that was if you called somebody and the phone line was busy, you could ask the operator, can you verify the busy signal? What that meant was they would interrupt. They sort of barge into the phone call, and they're able to determine. It was a scrambled signal, but they were able to determine, is the phone just off the hook, or is there a conversation going on? And then the operator would come back and say, there's conversation, or the phone is off the hook, would you like me to report it, or whatever. And if there was conversation, they would offer you the option to do an emergency interrupt, which I believe was free for a while, and then they started charging an arm and a leg for it. And the emergency interrupt, the operator would barge in. In fact, on my brain damage show, which is on 2600.com in the radio section, there are some times when obnoxious callers to the radio show would use that service, call interrupt. They would barge into a phone call that was going out over the air, and you'd hear the New York telephone operator saying, I have an emergency interrupt for this phone number, and you would either tell them to get lost or you'd say, okay, I'll hang up and they can call me.
Well, I remember on Off the Hook even we used to do that.
It probably happened there too.
Yes.
Wait, did you say you used to do that? Wow.
Yeah,
Okay, all right.
Excuse me, this is Nanix. I have an emergency interruption for Bernie.
Yeah, good times, good times.
Now, and about what you're talking about now, you know, you can make money off these, data breaches. And, my friend made hundreds of thousands, well, not hundreds, but maybe tens of thousands of dollars. You know, you just call the credit, get a credit card and say, oh, I'm not sorry, I didn't get this credit card. Maybe it was a data breach. And then they just, you know, dismiss it.
They just dismiss tens of thousands of dollars. First of all, that's not making tens of thousands of dollars. That's stealing tens of thousands of dollars.
No, it's
big difference.
Saying, oh, you know, it's a data breach, you know, and they'll just think that it was, you know, a data breach from China.
Yeah, but what kinds of things was your friend buying with the credit card?
Well, going to Europe and going on trips.
Yeah, you see, the thing with that is sometimes you have to give your name to curious people who fly airplanes and let people into their countries. And they might do a little bit of investigation and say, hey, you've got the same name as the person that, you know, applied for the card in the first place. Isn't that odd?
No, but then you just blame China for it. I say, oh, there was
you blame China. You know, that only goes so far, Rebel. That only goes so far. You should visit your friend, though, wherever they wind up. I'm sure they'll appreciate the company.
I did visit them, and, you know, they ran out of money, though.
I don't know what to believe. Alex, why were you wearing a Rebel shirt before? I meant to ask you that.
No, I didn't even realize that.
He was wearing a shirt that said Rebel on it.
Well,
Rebel, you would have loved this.
Wearing a shirt without a name, that's a copyright.
Yeah, it is. He can go after you for that, as you well know,
that's
Alex.
Right, yeah.
But he's not wearing it now. For some reason, I think he realized that even though this is an audio show, somehow you would see him. And
that's right. Well, I'm actually establishing a pattern, you know, going forward from today, where every week I'm going to be wearing a shirt that predicts the name of the first caller. Might be Tim in Connecticut, could be Rebel.
It's almost always Rebel. You really only need one shirt.
I've got the Rebel shirt ready, as you know.
Well, I hope you pay for it, because that's the way I make my living. That's, you know, you know.
Yeah, Rebel is pretty litigious there, so yeah, look out for that. All right, Rebel, it's been a joy, as always, talking to you. I hope you stay safe over the next week, and we'll probably talk to you next week.
Yeah, of course. And it's the 2600 meetings on Friday.
Yes, as we already told the people on the radio show, but they are this Friday, and there'll be one, I believe, at the Citigroup building. Correct, Rob?
Yes, indeed. The Citigroup building on 53rd and Lexington.
In that mall with the weird name.
So, yep, in the Hue,
the food
court that is called the Hue.
The Hue.
And actually has some good stuff in it, some good food court options.
Sounds like you sneeze every time you say that. I'm going to the Hue.
Bless you.
See? All right, so Rebel, maybe we'll see you there.
Okay, yeah, maybe you'll be there. Okay.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye.
All right, that went fairly smoothly.
I think I'm working on my computer lab.
Uh-huh.
Next call.
802-321-4225. We're on for another few minutes. Extra 10, 12 minutes that we have for losing the time before. And your phone call.
There were some fun anecdotes shared in the YouTube chat, Gila, if you see those, about what people used to do to avoid paying for the collect calls.
Yes, this is true. excuse me. So, Tim in Connecticut said that my family, when traveling, would place a person-to-person collect call and ask for themselves. It would be declined, but told us we reached our destination okay.
I think everybody did that. I said my grandparents would do that, and it's true. And, you know, my grandparents were not phone freaks, all right? These are just normal, everyday people that would always use that system to convey a message. Ring the phone twice, hang up. And what are the odds of somebody else doing it at approximately that time? Very slim. And, you know, when the phone rang, I don't know if you guys grew up in households like this. When the phone rang, there was no caller ID, and it was a big deal. The phone ringing, you always picked it up. You never knew who was on the other end. And there was always something to be taken very seriously.
Also, I think there was an introduction to, like how to screen. I think that was, like, a family activity. You know, because I was assigned, you know, the the very job I think I'm doing now, like, you know, answer the phone, right? And you're learning things like how to present yourself, you know, ask if someone is available or ask if you can take a message if someone is available.
You were the call screener?
All of that.
You were the call screener for
your
household.
I did a lot of that. Wow. I feel there's some calls.
Did you ever call somebody and they would answer the phone, this is the Smith household, this is Reginald, how can it be so formal? Well, but you knew they were like told to do that by their parents. We'd delight in just calling them back over and over again. They couldn't break character.
Yeah, I didn't have strict rules like that, but that's the exact kind of thing I'm talking about. Like, that's like social conditioning where you're just learning phone etiquette, like, early on,
mm-hmm.
and you learn it, or you used to learn it, around the household telephone that required screening, you know, required certain, you know, rapport as, or certain, let's say, filter as far as who this number represents. Is it just an individual? No, it's this family, like you said. So we didn't have that rule. It was just hello, and then who are they asking for, all that, yeah. and then offer to take a note if they're not available, all that. Yeah. At least that's as far as I got with the job. And then, you know what, times changed, and never mind.
Well, there's so many fun things you could do with landlines. You know, pay phones that took incoming calls. You could call them at random and talk to strangers in the streets of New York City. We did that on our radio show back in the early 80s. And it was a ton of fun just meeting people that way. You didn't have to be doing a radio show to have that much fun. You just needed a phone number. We had at the other radio station a key system, a phone key system. That's like the five buttons on the phone. Picture a rotary phone, black rotary phone with five lines on the bottom and a hold button as well. This phone was special because you could press two buttons down at the same time. And if you did that, you connected two lines together. So what we do, and keep in mind there's no caller ID, we would call the local pizza shop and we'd connect them to just random places all over. You know, we find either cheap or free numbers to call and just connect them to all these places. And they pick up the phone and all of a sudden they're talking to an operator in Botswana or something, or they're talking to another pizza place in Manhattan, and it got to be an adventure, and they pick up the phone and be looking forward to the next call. So my friend and I, this was actually after a radio show, decided we were going to go down to that pizza place just to, like, because we had called it so many times, we got hungry, and we were there, and the phone rang while we were there, and the guy picked up the phone and said, "Yeah, what is it this time?" And it was the boss calling, and he got in trouble. And we heard the whole thing. But that kind of fun, you couldn't possibly do that these days. You couldn't pair lines together that easily. They probably don't have a landline. You probably couldn't reach somebody as easily on the phone. It was a special, magical time.
The longer I hang out with hackers, the more I realize how polite and mild-mannered and well-adjusted I behaved.
We were very polite.
Doesn't mean that I was. It just means that that's how I behaved.
We would connect people to their family in other parts of the world and all sorts. We had fun.
God, I didn't have any fun.
Well, all you have to do is bring back landlines and the fun will come. All right, 802-321-4225. Speaking of landlines, is that landline ringing or occupied? It is not?
Nay.
Okay, so we'll leave it open for a little while longer. Go ahead, Gila.
A brief announcement from the chat is that there is a new 2600 meeting in Birmingham, UK, starting this week.
If that is in fact true and it has not been submitted to the meeting's headquarters, there are two ways to do that, either meetings at 2600.com or go to 2600 meetings on Blue Sky. Don't go to Twitter. We're not looking at that anymore. 2600 meetings on Blue Sky, you'll be able to let us know there, and we'll follow you back and all that kind of thing. But let us know soon, because I believe that's being finalized tomorrow, and it won't be updated again until the next issue comes out. Yes, Alex.
As I'm sure Fun Socks is thinking at the moment, there's no Birmingham in the UK, Gila.
It's not actually Birmingham.
That's right. Yeah, they dropped that H. Yeah. We've only got the ham down in Alabama.
I said Birmingham.
Did you? I thought you said Birmingham.
Okay. I thought I said Birmingham.
There's an audio record. We can go back and find out.
They dropped the H from Birmingham, and they added it to the word herb for some reason.
We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just curious what you guys think about, I know this isn't really a politics show, but I just wanted to, I wondered what you think about the Biden pardoning his son.
Well, I do another radio show on Tuesdays. I talked about that at length yesterday, but I'll say just very quickly, I don't know what everybody is so surprised at. You know, this was the guy's son. He changed his mind. He went to Thanksgiving, and he acted like a human being. And, I just don't get Republicans get away with this kind of thing all the time. Was Hunter Biden supposed to spend the rest of Joe Biden's life in prison just to prove a point, just to take the high and mighty road? Or, yeah, you can say Joe changed his mind or was hypocritical or whatever. He's got his son back, and I can understand that. Even if, you know, I don't think it's right, it doesn't matter. It's a human thing. That's my feeling. Rob, do you have another?
Yeah, also, Joe Biden knows he's fully at the end of his political career, so anything he does really won't matter to his future at all. You know, what's he going to lose by going through it and doing this? Nothing. He has nothing to lose. He has, you know, a free son to gain. And I want to hear the Republicans talk about how weaselly pardoning is, you know, in a couple of months when the next one pardons himself.
Well, you know, there are people who are saying that. They're saying, well, he just made it easy for Trump to pardon all these other people. And do you honestly think he wouldn't have done that anyway? Do you think anything that you do is going to influence any of his actions? I seriously doubt that. Alex?
Yeah, I think, mostly side with you on this one, Emmanuel. I think it was a human decision for sure. But I also think it was, an amoral decision in many ways and an unpragmatic decision because – I think as you really were just hinting at here, the fact that he did this prevents the Democrats now from taking the moral high ground when it comes to the misuse and abuse
Alex,
of the elite.
Alex, they've been on that moral high ground for ages. It's so lonely on that road. They're not winning anything. They need to sometimes be a little selfish and just say, you know what, we've got the power, we're going to take it. Look, in North Carolina, as Republicans do everywhere, they're stripping the governor, the Democratic governor, of his power and making it so that Republicans always have the final say, even when they lose elections. You know, that is that's what their go-to. That's what they do. Democrats, I've never seen them do that. But they still keep losing, you know. So at some point, you got to say, "Screw you guys!" You know, I'm going to do this because I can, and I get it. I understand why.
That's all well and good if they're going to benefit the masses or the people in some way. But when you benefit a member of your immediate family, there's a big difference there.
You can do that. You know, your family is important.
And no one should be surprised that Joe Biden is concerned about his family. He pretty well, I mean, he trades in that as a core sense of his identity.
Look, when Joe Biden was president, I mean, he's, you know, on his last few days now, but if he had won re-election, you know, if he had stayed in the race and won re-election, he wouldn't have pardoned his son. I'm pretty sure of that, because it would have been seen as an abuse of his continuing power. But now that he's at the end, yeah, he's cashing in this one thing that he can do. I mean, he's supposed to not do that while Trump has done so much else and will continue to do so much else. No, that's just asking way too much.
Well, that's the point that I'm trying to get to here, is that you can make the claim that this causes the Democrats to have lost the moral high ground, and it makes it easier now for Trump to abuse this process. But I think you can look at it another way. You can go backwards in time, and you can say those crazy pardons that Trump made have basically set the stage for the abuse of the pardon process. That's, I think, a better way of looking at it, quite frankly, because up until then, pardons are always controversial, but his were batshit crazy.
Honestly, and it's funny because he pardoned some people that are criticizing this pardon. You know, people say, I guess the rule of law doesn't apply anymore, and they got pardoned by Trump, which is crazy. But I honestly think many of the American people are kind of resentful of the high moral ground. So if you do the right thing, they don't like you for that. And Trump does the wrong thing, it's like, yeah, it's what I want to do. I get that. He's one of us. You know, it's ridiculous, but that seems to be where we are. Gila, you're muted.
Sorry, not anymore. We have an interesting note from the chat from a user known as Dennis Lourdes, who says, Re-Biden's son, getting his son clear away from further difficulty and complication under a Trump Justice Department makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Then further goes on to say, is what Biden should do is January 1st issue an executive order clearing all student loans and require destruction of records in 15 days just to really throw Trump under the bus.
Wow. What if Biden pardoned every migrant that didn't have documentation? that would just piss everybody off. But still,
that would be something.
That would be fun. That would be just a good old fashioned fun.
Yeah, I'd be more in favor of that perhaps than benefiting your immediate family members. I mean,
yeah. Oh yeah, and federal legalization of cannabis. But anyway, yeah. I think there's just so many things we all should be thinking about in our own way, like to be prepared and this is you have to expect, just as people might be reacting in your close proximity, that there's this is the Biden administration weighing anchor a little bit. They're kind of packing up the tent and leaving the political scene, as was pointed out.
Well, if it pisses off the Republicans and pisses off Trump that much, I don't really care what it is. I'll nod my head in favor of it. Anyway, does that answer your question, caller?
Yes, caller.
No, it does. Yeah, it does. I was just trying to say, because to me, Democrats, they're so weak. I mean, they're so weak. Uh-huh. They're all, they cannibalize their own people, and they're all like, oh, high and mighty, and how can, I mean, how's he going to leave his son in prison or face in prison and leave the president?
To prove a point. Yeah.
Right.
To prove a point.
That's where, I think the logic that Alex was speaking to, it's like, yeah, but what do we gain? And nothing. I think that was what you were saying. You know, is that what you heard in that conversation?
Yeah, and they're still losing. They still lose elections all the time, doing this moral stuff, and they're still losing. It doesn't work anymore. You know, they need to get tough. All that stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Let's see how this plays out, and hopefully other tactical decisions are made as well. And hopefully people wake up.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, we appreciate you joining us.
Take care. 802-321-4225, not much time left, but good to hear from people. Any other thoughts about this issue or others or things from the chat or anything? Anyone, please, step in.
They're unmuting.
It's four of you, for God's sake.
There are. People are talking about, other pardons that have happened. And it's interesting to note that in his first term, Trump pardoned his son-in-law's father. So,
and now he's the ambassador to France.
Yeah.
The goddamn ambassador to France. He has no experience whatsoever. Oh, my God. And just all the crazy people that are being nominated for positions of power. It's funny. It's a good laugh. We're all enjoying it. But it's not going to be so funny when they actually get installed. There's a good likelihood that at least a few of them will. All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Over Time. Go ahead.
Hey, two things I want to say. The second is regards toothpaste. So if I forget, please remind me.
Okay.
But, in this culture that uses historical and unprecedented as two words that, obviously people don't know history, love to use. When Biden justified his son's pardon, he said something that nobody paid attention to, because, this is self-serving. He said that he was unjustly singled out for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if you remember what happened over the summer, when he had a plea bargain in place for, a pretty routine case that happens all the time, the Republicans in the House brought it up and, tearing their clothes off and saying what a scandal it was that this was being offered, and then it was withdrawn. So he has a point.
Absolutely,
the guy
absolutely
was being prosecuted because they couldn't get to him,
mm-hmm,
meaning Biden Sr., the president. They tried to, you know, meanwhile, Trump was impeached twice. They couldn't find anything that they would have hanged him on. So they got to the sun. And unfortunately, this is what happened. And yeah. I don't see, you know, nobody in the media mentioned this.
Well, it was mentioned.
It's questionable.
It was mentioned, but...
Now.
Okay.
They mentioned it in the summer. Nobody brought it up now. Nobody said, by the way, it's true. It was singled out for...
Right. If you found somebody who committed the same crimes as Hunter Biden, they would not have been facing the prison time that he was.
Of course.
And the Republicans would not give a rat's ass about that person. And if Joe Biden goes and pardons everybody who committed the exact same crimes, they're not going to care about that either. They only care about somebody whose last name is Biden or, you know, whatever target they have.
Find me a case comparable to that that was ever discussed on the House floor in the entire U.S. history. Almost 250 years of it. As I said, you know, as a visual artist, I will make a piece, a tombstone that says the American Republic, July 4, 1776, November 5th, 2024. Because I think we're really going towards not just unprecedented and uncharted. No, it has happened before in history. You know, Julius Caesar was at least a military commander, and the Roman Empire moved from the Republic, which is what inspired the so-called founding fathers in this country, not the Empire, it was the Republic. So with Julius Caesar, we have the end of the Republic. With Donald Trump, we have the wholesale, you know, piecemeal selling to our enemies, to the highest bidder, essentially, of everything that was the American Republic. That's my personal opinion.
Right.
Now, let me get back to the toothpaste before...
Hang on. I want to hear what Kyle has to say about this.
I just want to challenge just a little bit. I get why you think, like you want to posit it that way. I feel like we're all kind of... Like, there's a lot of people saying that... Framing it in the way that it's like, okay, so this is the end, da-da-da-da-da, and it's like... I feel like it's like reaching for confirmation, like, oh yes, it's the end. So yeah, like, it like validates a level of discourse of like, oh, it's fatalistic. It's like, okay, so I'm going to set my hair on fire and I'm going to, you know, whatever crazy direction after that, or not crazy, whatever. Maybe it gets very serious and very like, grim and just fatalistic. But my point is, I think it's more like I don't want to go there because it's tempting, and my thought is that this is more like the hard way. There's no easy way in the U.S. It's always the hard way, always something like that. But I don't dispute, and maybe I'm wrong. You know, I'm not your way of thinking. Your opinion, just as you said. So that's all. Go ahead.
Kyle, I just want to address one thing you said. You know, we are there. No, we're not even there. It hasn't even started. If you think this is painful, wait until January 6th when it's going to be confirmed that this bastard is going to be our so-called leader. And then, you know, January 21st when he gets into the White House, and that's just the beginning. So we are still at the prodromes. The show hasn't started yet. You know, this is the pre-show. So... You know, I don't want to get too dark here, but this reminds me a lot of, you know, it's 1932 Berlin.
Well, again, you know, I have a real problem with that. I have a real problem with the Nazi Germany analogy because, you know, it's a different situation. I think, you know, the American people right now are not like the Nazi crowds of the 1930s. It's going to take a whole lot to get to that level. But there are certainly some disturbing things, and fascist leaders are certainly very disturbing, regardless of the kinds of people who follow them. So, you know, I take the point that this is definitely a dark era that's about to begin, but I do think there is hope. I do think that there are enough people that get it, enough people on the opposition, and I think there are even enough people who took the plunge and voted for this guy that will see the threat when it actually finally becomes apparent to them. I know it should have been seen years ago, But some people, it takes longer. Kyle, do you have some other point?
Yeah, I think there's going to be enough that is plainly that we don't need to point and see it everywhere. Because again, like speaking to this in language, you're making it, you're trying it on, right? So you're airing it, and like in like our reaction, our support, our discussion, the validation, whatever is by in that sharing of the idea. And I'm thinking that idea necessarily, like, it seems like we're really looking for it. And I think that there's going to be enough of it that is apparent. We should be looking for what actions are preventing that, what actions are positive, what actions are going to fortify or help people in the face of that as the dominant activity. It's no longer a rarity. So again, I think it's about people shifting to where actually Democrats are most well equipped, and that is the opposition. So oppose, right? But like, it's not something you have to sell if it's going to be something so apparent.
Okay, let's
I'm with you. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't be calling this show and trying, you know, to have a discussion about this, because I would just crawl up and die, which is what they would like us to do.
Just
but
another
of
way
course,
of thinking.
You know, we're talking and we're trying to find ways to go on as you know, with some degree of normality. Not that we're normalizing any of what's going on, but we do need some degree of predictability in our lives, right? You need to know that when you switch you flip the switch on, the light is going
to
go on.
Okay, get your second point. Get to your second point.
So when somebody mentioned getting the toothpaste back in the tube.
Which you can do, by the way. You can do
exactly,
that.
Exactly. That's my point. You know, I do it regularly, but it's a great metaphor, because that's how I deal with my data. I take out as little as possible so that if I took out too much, I can jiggle the tube, create a void, and put the excess back in. That's all I wanted to say. You know, I like it as a metaphor, and it works in my life in both regards, data and toothpaste.
Well, that's going to be the final point made tonight, and it's a lovely one to envision.
Okay, great talking with you guys, as always.
All right, thanks for the call.
All the best.
Take care.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
That's going to do it for tonight. And yes, we made up for the time we lost. We're sorry about that, but we fixed the problem. Thank you, Kyle, for taking care of it all. And I know it was
I'm sorry. Wait, I can't.
It was frustrating.
In my good ear?
Yeah, I said it. I'm not going to say it again.
No, it's over here.
But
let me hold it.
We'll just reboot that machine more often and not let Microsoft take advantage.
It honestly, it was on a good run, let's say.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, you have to care for these things. It's like a Tamagotchi, you know,
uh-huh.
Or any kind of small house plant, or
right.
I don't know what I'm saying. Succulent cactus.
We've been on long enough.
Ready to end this.
Guys in Skype land, say your goodbyes.
Good night, all. See you at the 2600 meeting.
See ya, Gila. See ya, Alex.
I'm waving, like you can hear that.
Yes.
Thanks to everybody for hanging in with us, even during our technical issues this evening. It's great, as always. Thank you.
And we'll be back next Wednesday for Off the Hook, 7 p.m. And hopefully we'll see you then. OTH@2600.com. And please support WBAI, because they're the ones that bring us all together. 833-WBAI. NYC. Who's furiously typing? That's you, Gila?
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry.
That's a nice sound effect. That just confused me.
This once a mod, always a mod. Come on.
Yeah.
Like.
All right. I'm signing off now. Good night, everyone.
Bye.